Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ageless Sisters, your global source for beauty and anti-aging, with your host, Cynthia Rowland, creator of Facial Magic and Luscious Lips.
Well, good morning, everyone. It is such a beautiful day in Oklahoma City. We have had rain since before the sun came up. And when it rains, I always smile because after living in California for 25 years, having no rain for 4 years, but I always say it's more like 10 years, this is quite a blessing to just wake up and hear that beautiful pitter-patter of rain and thunder and sea lightning. So it's a real new experience living in Oklahoma and enjoying their wonderful weather. So today we have a special guest. Her name is Nina, and I love that name, Nina, because it just sounds like somebody who should be a ballet dancer. So Nina C. Payne, has written her first novel. And when you think about this woman's day-to-day existence with teaching yoga, raising two kids, hiking on the beach, going for long walks, traveling, how in the world did she write a book? Well, we're going to find out about that book, and the name of that book is Moments in Time, and it is her debut novel. So let us welcome Nina C. Payne to our show today. Hello, Nina.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. And I'm so happy you're an ageless sister, because when you're out there walking on the beach, you can't help but be an ageless sister, right?
That's absolutely right.
Makes you feel so good. Well, Nina lives in California, so she is a beach girl, having her two children, a boy and a girl. And all of a sudden, it seems to me, Nina, you correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't know all the particulars, but it seems like your life changed in a very dramatic way some time ago that prompted you to write this book. What happened?
Well, in 2008, my brother, who I was, he just happened to be my best friend as well. We were very, very close. He was diagnosed with terminal cancer in 2008 at the young age of 48. And he was given basically 4 to 6 months to live. And so he lived actually 4 years past that. And we felt so blessed that he was able to survive and we had that extra time with him. But it was, of course, as you can imagine, very, very life-changing. And in 4 months after that, I lost my father, who basically just couldn't go on. He died of a broken heart, literally. His aorta ruptured. So it was back-to-back blows, and then it was the aftermath of that was me basically falling into just a very deep, dark place. And I describe it in my book as feeling like I was belly flopping into a bed of nails every 20 seconds. And I couldn't understand how anyone could endure this kind of pain and actually survive it and get to the other side. And so in 2013, it was exactly the week of the anniversary of my brother's death. We were in Boston. And for some reason, I'd never been to Boston, but Boston really inspired me. And I've been writing since I was a little girl, never had anything published, never had any intentions of having anything published, just writing because that was my creative outlet. And there was this line in a poem that I'd written many years back that said, "My dear friend, in the simplicity of life, all the opposites are equal." And that just kept going through my head, and I was kind of wondering, why is this line just sticking with me all through Boston as I'm going from place to place? And it occurred to me, the depths of despair that I was in, the grief and the pain, was so intense that the opposite of that had to be true. There was something waiting for me of equal and greater value on the other side of that, an awakening and a blossoming and a joy like I'd never felt before. And sure enough, it was there. When we came back, that's when I sat down, and it was literally like the floodgates in front, you know, just opened. And for 4 to 5 months, I could not stop writing. It was as if something was just going through me and transcending, and I just could not stop writing. So that's how Moments in Time was born. It's, even though it is a novel, the emotions are real. It's very authentic and raw, and my brother's story is intertwined in there. But it's also a romance. It's about forbidden love, and it's about you know, this the protagonist Cassandra being faced with feeling these sparks of a desire for her her yoga instructor, and she's been married for 15 years and she's never felt that way before. So she's faced with many decisions that she needs to make. So it's a multi-layered story, and there's also a best friend in there that's a key part of the story, Mark. And so it's a multi-layered story about friendship, love, forgiveness, compassion, you know, endurance. So that's basically the story and how Not Moments in Time was born.
Wow, that is a great story. I'm sorry for the tragedy, so, but it certainly inspired you to do something new and different for yourself.
Yes, it certainly did, and it's interesting during that time, and I think maybe a lot of people can relate. When you're going through grief and the loss of someone, and even it could just be a divorce, there's so many well-intentioned people who try to give you well-intentioned advice, but until you're ready to flip that switch back on, until you're ready to really make that change that needs to happen from within, there's nothing really anybody. People would tell me, oh, you have your children, oh, you have this, oh, you have, oh, I know what I have. That doesn't change the feelings that I'm feeling. When I learn to embrace the grief, when I learn to really make it a companion for a while, was when I was able to walk in joy.
Now, through all of this, did you just pray a lot? How did you get through all of this besides writing?
You know, I got back on my mat. I had rejected that for a while, and I got back on my mat. I started doing my meditation again and practicing my yoga and doing the things that I knew initially I may not want to do. And that's where the discipline has to come in, where you just have to believe in the process and know that doing these things is going to... I was down to 89 pounds when we were in Boston. I was withering away, and I couldn't eat. I was so full of grief, I couldn't eat. And so slowly, food regained its taste, and you know, I started seeing nature again, and I started taking my walks back on the beach, and I would have to force myself initially. So it was a little, you know, like they say, baby steps. So it was, but what happened on the other side of it was, like I said, a love like I'd never felt before, a joy like I've never felt before. It completely transformed my life. So the death, in essence, gave me a rebirth.
Was a rebirth.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
Yes, it was. Well, let me ask you some other questions. So how long have you been a yoga instructor?
I received my my certification in 2004. So, and I had worked initially in studios, and now basically I just work. My brother, when he was diagnosed with cancer, I follow a plant-based diet and have since 1997, and my brother made those changes in 2008 immediately. And he started following a plant-based diet and was very conscientious of how he was eating. And we started doing yoga together. So I had stopped teaching in studios at that time and primarily was focused on him, but have since taken on private clients who face health challenges and issues, even, you know, sports injuries. But that's where my passion is now, is working with people who have, and the caregivers who are really, I just don't feel, receive enough recognition for their efforts and then the caretaking process and how much they have to go through and the stress they have that they endure. So working with caretakers as well has become a passion of mine.
And so do you teach them yoga moves when you work
with
these
caregivers? I teach them breathing and I teach them yoga. I mean, I believe that even if you're just in your bed and you can't basically get up for very long periods of time or at all, yoga can be done. If you can move, if you can breathe, you can do yoga.
So, I think it's primarily one of the best ways to stay healthy, not only physically, but your mental health as well. There's something about those poses that just sends you to another place.
It most certainly does. It for me, it's been, in many occasions, life-saving. It's just, you know, if you just do a forward bend to your own degree and just allow the blood to flow to the brain and rejuvenate all the brain cells there. And then as you slowly come out of it, it's amazing the feeling. And it just calms your central nervous system. And the effects of yoga internally, what it does even for your internal organs, detoxifying and cleansing and just keeping everything healthy and moving in the joints, lubricating your joints. So so that it is something that can be done into our, you know, 90s, 100s, however long we live. That's the beauty of
exactly.
it.
Exactly. One mm-hmm. aspect of yoga that I found so amazing was how it improved my balance. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought I was walking pretty well, and then I noticed one day I just didn't quite have the balance I thought I should, or that I remembered having. And that's right after that is when I started a yoga class, and I went, oh my gosh, this is so wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And after I saw one of my girlfriends fall on the street, I knew that I better stay with that yoga as long as I
yeah.
can. And I think that should be one of your next new endeavors, Miss Nina C. Payne.
I know.
Is getting
you just
a little yoga
me.
Video together and put it for sale so people can watch you in action and follow along.
Yeah, I would love to do so. It actually never occurred to me until right before the show when you said it. I'm like, maybe I would do that. Because
yes,
I'm so passionate
so
about it. Yeah.
I know. I can hear that passion in your voice about yoga. So, one of the little questions that your publicist sent over was ask her about how do you find the time to exercise? That sounds like one of her questions, that she's probably a hardworking publicist. And how is it that you find that time to exercise? Because yoga doesn't take but an hour usually.
You know, I believe that yoga can be interspersed throughout our day, and yoga is basically a way of life in terms of, you know, what is always available to us no matter where we are, our breath. So I do make a point of doing, you know, yoga poses, and I do carve out that time in the morning and then in the evening. And it's almost like I look at it as essential as brushing my teeth or, you know, hygiene. It's just an integral part of my day. There's no excuses. I get to my mat. Even if I have 20 minutes, it's so effective. But then also throughout my day, practicing mindfulness. And then when I see that my breathing is becoming shallow, remembering to take long inhalations in, long exhalations out, and coming back to my breath. And even if you're at a stop, you know, the pelvic floor muscles, especially as women, if you're mm-hmm. at a stop sign, you can engage your pelvic floor. It's like you're, excuse me, but stopping the urination, that's the sensation. And that's yeah. so important, especially for women who have had children or getting older, to really develop the pelvic floor muscles. And even just contracting our thighs and carrying it with breath and doing like isometric exercises no matter where we are. And in our posture and how we carry ourselves, making sure that, you know, just like when we practice mountain pose, and that might be a pose that you're audience might want to look up, carrying mountain pose into your day, if you're standing at the cashier, all of these things are going to help improve. If you're sitting in a chair at work all day long, maybe just doing a slight forward bend and maybe lengthening through your spine and looking up towards the ceiling and doing gentle twists in your chair, all of these mm-hmm. things. So people don't have to think, oh, I need an hour and it has to be this full sequence. No.
Or I have to get on the mat to do it.
You're
talking about chair activity.
Mm-hmm. Anywhere you mm-hmm. can do it. Anywhere. Yes.
That's so good to know.
Mm-hmm.
So let me think here. So are you thinking of a new book?
Yes. I'm working on a sequel to Moments in Time. Yes, the end of it, Scream sequel. So, and I have many people who've emailed me to my author's email, almost mad at me, going, what? because of the way I
well,
ended
this
it.
Is so
like
wonderful
I said,
because most people don't have the inclination to write a novel. Mm-hmm. And so this is a real undertaking of love. How many pages did you write?
Moments in Time is 212 pages.
And well, that's respectable. Mm-hmm.
I thought so, and I didn't mm-hmm. feel like I wanted to add any more to it because I felt it was complete. And when I felt it was complete, it was complete. So,
mm-hmm.
But I am working on the sequel. And like I said, even though Moments in Time is a work of fiction, it's like Stephen King put it best, fiction is the truth between the lies. So I think that there's a lot of... Yes, I know, right? It's funny because
yes.
a lot of my people who know me will say, who's this and who's that? I'm like, it's fiction. And then I just
mm-hmm.
sort of give them a slight smile.
They're trying to find themselves in your characters.
Yeah.
Well, let me just stop right here and make sure that mm-hmm. everyone knows how to find you. Go to www.ninacpayne. That's N-I-N-I. Let's start again. www.ninacpayne.com. NINACPAYNE, NinaCPayne.com. And I was on your website yesterday? I don't know, but I just thought, this has got to be like one of the best interviews because you've just gone through the traumas and come through them so brilliantly because, and to me that just speaks volumes because I don't know how I would ever react losing someone close to me because that's never happened other than my parents. Mm-hmm. And my sister lost her son, so that was horrific. But it wasn't me losing, having a loss like that. What's your best advice on helping people that are struggling to survive after a loss? It doesn't even have to be unexpected, just after a loss.
You know, I feel that coming to terms with a few things is we can't control what life throws our way. That's out of our control. But we can control how we react to it. We can choose to wallow in self-pity, and that's okay for a while, you know, but you just don't want to reside there. And or we can, you know, be victims of the circumstance, or we can become victors of circumstance. And it's by doing the things that, again, nurture us. And before we do something, especially during that time, because it is such a vulnerable time, surrounding ourselves with people who are truly looking after our best interests and making decisions. But when you make a decision during that time, ask yourself, is this serving my highest and my greatest good? And if it isn't, step aside from it and move into the direction that is, because a lot of people will can turn to drugs, to alcohol, to other things because the pain is so intense, you just want to run away from it. You just want to resist it. And that's the point I was making earlier, is that when I learned to kind of surrender and relax into the pain and allow it to just be, it was my companion for a while. And I embraced it and said, okay, you know, life is an ebb and a flow. And there's going to be moments of absolute joy and bliss, and there's going to be moments of absolute pain, but there's also going to be an equilibrium in there somewhere. And that's where our body, and, you know, I don't know, experiences I had was when my father, after my brother passed, I had to quickly, you know, shift gears, and now I was taking care of my father. And then when he passed, I remember walking around in the world, and people were laughing and talking, and I felt like, wow, the world's just going on, and I wanted to be like that. And I think that's because that's what our natural state, and I don't know if they really were happy or not, I don't know, but that's our natural state. That's where we naturally want to gravitate to, is to be in that state of equilibrium and to be in that state of balance. So that's when we see that, it's not that we're being envious, it's that that's what our body and our minds and our souls are telling us. This is where the shift needs to happen. This is where we need to go.
Yes, like joy, you belong to joy, and joy belongs mm-hmm. to you. And how do you just make that happen?
Yes.
What did your children think about your, you know, hear you write a novel? And what do your kids think about your pathway here? Are they following along? Are they saying, Mom, great job? How do they react to your fame at this point?
They are my biggest fans, and it was interesting because, again, like I said, I've been writing since I was little, but never had shared my writings with hardly anyone. And when I had written the book, I had no intentions of publishing it. And my husband said, "We are getting this published. This is really wonderful," and I was terrified. But then my son said something just amazing to me. He said, "Mom, if you don't do this, and it's because of fear that you don't do it, what kind of a message are you sending to us?" And that was it right mm-hmm. there. And the other thing is both my kids, you know, are brilliant writers. My daughter is just, her poetry has just, especially in this last year, she went to Pratt Institute for, they have an amazing creative writing program in Brooklyn for a month, and her writing has just blossomed. I consider her to be like those beat poets. She writes from such a raw, authentic place. It gives you chills, and I'm so proud of the both of them for their writing abilities.
My.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that you will keep all of the things that they write so that you can share them with them as they grow through and have their own children.
Oh, absolutely.
Sometimes kids just, yeah, throw that stuff away. And probably.
Oh, I hang on to it for dear life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you have any other pearls of wisdom to share with us today?
You know, I really encourage people when they're going through times like this to find movement, to find some kind of an outlet. For me, and then don't put off anything. If you've ever said to yourself, I really want to do blank, fill in that blank. Do it. I've always wanted to try river rafting. I did it in Costa Rica. There's so many things that I've wanted to do. I've always wanted, when I was young, I wanted to drum, and my parents, you know, it was kind of old school, said girls don't drum. Well, I'm taking drum lessons now. So, you know,
oh, my goodness.
See, I know. Here I am. I'm 51, and I'm taking drum lessons, and I'm loving every single minute of it.
And river rafting. And there's probably lots of other things that you're doing now that you've given up all this fear that was around something. Mm-hmm. I don't know what.
Yeah.
I guess just learning to give up that struggle.
Exactly, and to try to live a more fearless life, you know, it's like,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it doesn't mean we're not going to have our fears. Of course we are, and they're going to come up, but we just kind of face them in a more with integrity. Say, no, you know, okay, I understand where this is coming from, and kind of push through it. And not to be reckless, absolutely not. I mean, I have no desire to go bungee jumping. But, you know, but
my 8-year-old granddaughter just went bungee jumping a year ago.
Oh, my gosh.
She was 7. I know. I was shocked.
Good for her.
They took a video of it, and my heart was in my mouth the whole time, even though I knew that she had survived that. But it's sometimes fear just holds us back.
Mm-hmm.
It cripples us. And if you're living a fearful life, how can you be passionate about anything?
Exactly. That's exactly right. That's very well said. You can't. You can't, and it is crippling. That can be our greatest handicap.
Yes, it can. So the new book, is it in progress, Nina?
Oh, yeah. I'm working on it and having a lot of fun with it.
Oh, that's good. Do you
yeah.
ever... feel like you have any messages coming from your brother or your father about what to write next?
You know, I felt that my brother was with me through the moments in time. I really felt he was. I felt he was there through every word, every sentence. And I think he's letting me kind of fly solo on this one, to be honest.
Uh-huh.
He's like, okay, I had you in the first one. Now
mm-hmm.
you're on your own. Let's see what you can do. So, yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Knowing what you know now and looking back over everything you've gone through with the death of your brother, the death of your father, do you believe now that everything happens for a reason?
I like to say that everything happens to show us more of who we are. Things happen as they happen. I think everything happens as it should. And sometimes people look at me funny when I say that. But the reason I say that is because that's the way it happened. You know, there's no, I can't. Rewrite history. That it happened as it should because that's the way it happened. And
mm-hmm.
now what am I going to do with it? So I believe it shows us more of who we are and who we can be and who we can become.
Mm-hmm. I like that answer.
Mm-hmm.
So it says here, you say your story is drawn from some real life experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And then your publicist wrote, what is fact and what is fiction? What did she mean by that?
You know, I get asked that quite a bit where people will say, well, what is, and again, I go back to Stephen King's quote, that the fiction is the truth between the lies. There is truth in there. But I think as writers, as long as the emotions are real and it comes from a place that's deep within and from the heart, readers can feel that. And I think that's why there's been a great response also on my Facebook page. I just started it in November, and I have 25,000 followers. And I think that's because in my poetry, it's just from my heart, and I can't give it out any other way. And I think because I write about love, and I also write about unrequited love, and I write about loss and death and sorrow and grief and letting go and surrendering, that's what we all go through in life. None of us are immune to that. And I think that's why there's been a response, is that it's tapping into, I'm putting words to people's emotions and something that they can't verbalize. So it gives them a sense of connection, a sense of belonging, because if otherwise you feel isolated in your grief and isolated in your pain. But when you realize and then so many other people are commenting, we're one consciousness, we're one breath, and we are all going through the same experience, maybe different circumstances. Mm-hmm. but our emotions are all the same.
Mm-hmm. One of my very good friends has three years ago she lost her mother, mm-hmm. and even though she didn't like her mother, mm-hmm. and her mother didn't like her very much, it was mm-hmm. the most painful experience because she had so many emotions to fight through and to, you know, make sense of. It was very, very painful for her. So I have a feeling that your book, Moments in Time, might just be a very cathartic read to those who are searching for peace and more answers to their grief.
Yes, definitely. Absolutely. And, you know, I think in the situation that you just mentioned, that's got to be even more difficult because there's so many unresolved issues and maybe mm-hmm. a lot of guilt attached to it. And I was very blessed in my relationship with both my father and my brother that I was able to tell them I loved them, and they were able to tell me that back. And, you know, to ask for forgiveness and for whatever, you know, it's like,
right.
You know, I just to let them know, and my father let me know, I did my best, and I knew that, and I told him I did too. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's all any of us can do.
That's yeah, right. Now, what about your mom? Is she still around?
Oh, yes, she's around.
Oh, she must be very proud of you.
She is, and right now we're going through the painstaking process of going through everything because she's moving to La Jolla, and I don't know if you're familiar, since you live in Southern California.
Oh, yes, I know La Jolla very well.
Yeah, we're getting her a condo, but we're going through, you know, it's memories and things and helping
yes.
her to let go
yes.
of so many things. And so, yeah, but we're, you know, we're helping her through that, and she's also helping us, so...
Well,
yeah.
That's good. Does she mm-hmm. do yoga with you once in a while?
You know, she used to do yoga, and I'm trying to get her back to her mat because, you know, my father practiced yoga as well, and so I'm trying to. I think once I get her moved and settled, there's going to be – I'm not taking no for an answer. We're going to be doing it. We're going to go down to the cove there in La Jolla and do some yoga together. So.
Oh, what a beautiful place to do yoga. Oh, my
yeah.
goodness, I love that area.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Nina, this has been a very wonderful interview with you today, and I know that we have discussed many aspects of yoga, the benefits of yoga, your book, your family life, and you're here. I mean, you feel like I feel like you've given up the struggle, and you're just very present in the world with and a lot of pieces around you.
Yes, and it's nice to finally feel like I've come to that place, and I'm always, even if things do come up, I know that I have just this confidence and this faith that I can always return to that.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I'm glad that you know that.
Thank
you. Well, we're going to close the show with you today, and I want everyone to please go visit her website. It's ninacpayne.com, ninacpayne.com. Nina, you've just been a great guest, and I thank you so much for spending time with us today, and we are delighted that you are a guest of the Ageless Sisters.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, you can just stay on the line for right now. I'm just going to close this show
okay.
by saying that our next guest is Ginger King, and I met Ginger through Jackie Silver at a beauty show. And Ginger is a cosmetic chemist, and she holds many patents, but here's the big thing. She has developed over 360 cosmetic items, and she's won every award, and she is going to come on and talk with us on our next show, which is October the 15th, and she's going to tell us what's the new hot stuff for skincare. And because I'm in the skincare business, I really want to talk with her, and I would love for her to design some of our new products. If you're a Facial Magic user, please know that we have online training available for you, and you can take that training from now until the end of the year so that you get through all of these holiday parties with ease, having great confidence in your appearance, because I'm going to make certain that your face is toned, lifted, tightened, and absolutely beautiful as you wear new hairstyles, new clothes, new jewelry, You cannot forget your face. So we're going to close the show. We've just got a few seconds left by again thanking Nina Payne. Moments in Time, go to her website and take a look at what she offers you. Until next time, bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Ageless Sisters. Tune in again next time for the most up-to-date beauty and anti-aging secrets, tips, and shortcuts.
Nina, thanks again.
Oh, my goodness, thank you. That was wonderful. You really put me at ease. I appreciate that.
It was so fun, wasn't it?
Yes, it really
was. We'll send you a copy of the show if I can figure out how to do that.
Yeah, and I'll post it again. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.